Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Neil and Christine Baker Psychic Hour. Today we are doing the same thing we always do, taking your calls, having a conversation, and that is all. We are broadcasting this week, obviously, on Monday today, not our normal day, and Friday, which is our normal day. But also next week, the schedule will be abridged, which is going to, well, it's not going to be abridged. It's going to be adjusted Monday and Friday as well because of New Year's Day. So that is the schedule, the phone number, 914-338-0164. And I'm multitasking here by creating episodes, but we are going to bring on our first caller who is 407, and then 651 is our next. So let us get started here. Hello, Michelle.
Oh, hi. Hi, Kristen. Hi, Neil. How are you?
Hello.
Well, I just wanted to ask if it's possible, for a message from my father today.
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask to connect to. I knew you were. Yeah. Okay. You want to connect? Yes, it's possible to ask. I mean, what happens as far as him coming through is.
Right. I understand.
10/17/74. And what was his birth date?
My dad's
1943. He was a 32-5. And you had kind of a difficult relationship with him, if I'm remembering correctly.
No, not him, my mother.
Oh, it was the mother that you had a difficult relationship with? So close to father, but difficult with mother.
Right.
So how did that work exactly? It was hard with your mom. Did he defend you to her? Just out of curiosity.
My mom would get upset or jealous or whatever that I sided with him or he sided with me. And it was always kind of like a 2-to-1 thing. You know, as a child, you know, I don't know, that's how it worked. But it created problems, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But my mom also had a different personality. My father and I had more similar personalities. My mother was very heavy when my dad wasn't. He was completely the opposite.
And he was a smoker, right?
He was. He did give it up, but he was for many years.
I mean, your years line up, you know, the 7-4 and the 4-3, your years line up. And your month and day adds up to his day, essentially. But that's just the numerical connection. We can start off on the first step, which is, in spite of the fact that it's December, he's showing me some snow, and he's showing me a sleigh or some kind of device you would ride on in snow. Now, we don't know. Maybe that's literal. I'm not sure yet. So the first thing we have to do is see if there's, you had any experience with him in the snow throughout your lifetime.
No, it wasn't that. We had a pool and the pool broke, and so what he did is in the winter he made it an ice skating rink for me.
Okay, that's it. And did you slide across it? Did you use it?
Yeah, I would slide too. Sometimes I wouldn't skate, I would just slide on it, yeah.
Okay, so that is what he's conveying. That's where we have to start. He's showing a memory. And from that, he's talking, from there he goes into a green ribbon. Now, all of this seems very familiar for Christmas and stuff, but he goes into a green ribbon. But did he ever make you anything for Christmas? Did he ever do anything for you for Christmas that came from his heart? He didn't buy it at the store, but it came from him.
That I don't remember.
Okay, that you don't remember.
So, anything with ornaments?
The only thing I remember is one time, I had a green ornament with my name on it. It was a big green ornament, but I don't think it came from him. I think it came from my grandmother.
Oh, okay, I don't care about that. The green, now the green makes sense. So he had a green.
Yeah, because green used to be my favorite color when I was a kid.
Oh, okay. My favorite color too, and Neil's favorite color. Maybe yours has changed,
oh, really?
But it remains. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a big green ornament with my name on it. It was really cool.
Yeah, that's what he's. So we made a connection. And that means that he's in the astral realm. He's available. He can hear us. It doesn't mean we can have a precise conversation, but it means that he's sending vibrations that are translated into symbols that resonate with your experience. So he's there. And so now some typical old-fashioned statements. He loves you. Hello. Thank you. I care about you. He's talking about, then from there he goes to a bottle that broke. So, see, we're caught in the situation trying to translate some of this stuff, but we know we have them. So have you broken anything recently? So have you broken any bottles, or in fact, are you taking anything from a bottle, like medicine, cough syrup? No.
No.
Okay.
What about spirits? Any wine bottle?
No.
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 For
no,
her?
No. No. This part we're lost. We don't know what he's talking about. And she's not validating anything, so we can't try to stretch. If it doesn't come in immediately, like the green ornament, it's just that there's a bottle that's broken, and I'm not sure what it. Did you ever have any goldfish or any small pets like that?
I did, but the container never broke. They just died. That's all.
Oh, it does. I don't care about that. Right now, I'm on a different topic.
It could be.
I just want to know if you have goldfish.
Yeah, I had them as a child. Yeah.
Okay. Well, here we are. We're in a place where we believe we have caught him. He's sending a message of love. He sent out some symbols about the pool breaking, the ice, you sliding on it, riding on it, the green ornament. So we are there right there. If you're in this short reading wanting to know if he's around, yes, in my judgment, he is. I would agree. I think you would agree too. To the idea of him sending a message to you just to connect is sort of a hug of recognition.
Okay.
Messages? I don't know. Messages? I mean, what kind of a message are you looking for? You know, be
like
good.
Does he have any positive things that he wants to tell me coming up that I should look for?
I can't remember. Do you actually have kids?
No.
No kids, nothing.
She's not married, nothing. I don't know if she's still in a... Are you still in a relationship with that gentleman you were with before?
He's around, but I don't think it's very serious, and that's disappointing.
Oh, wait, say that again. Repeat what you just said. I'm sorry.
I said he's around, but I don't think it's very serious, and that's disappointing.
You know, I mean, I'm not... The message that I'm getting from your father, you're asking your father for a message about the future or something. I'm not getting that he has anything in that regard to share with you. All I'm getting is that, hello, honey, I'm here. I love you. I hear you. I want to send my love to you. I mean, if that either works for you or it doesn't. That's what I'm getting. I'm asking him, can you send me a vibration of some sort of message about the future? And I'm not getting anything like, you know, this is going to happen or that's going to happen. The only thing that he alludes to, and I'm reluctant to even express it, is something about nurses. And I don't know what that is yet, but if you wanted me to go dig for something and see if there's anything I can bring back to you, it's something about nursing. The only thing you would do is say, well, were there any nurses in my past? Do I know any nurses?
No, I know what he's talking about. That's one of the upcoming projects that I want to do. It has to do with the medical industry, and nurses would be included. So what that is, that's an okay. That's a green light from him that's a good idea.
Oh, and then green again. Okay, so there's your message. I mean, connecting to a spirit from the other side is not an easy task. Some psychics claim to do it, and I'm listening to them. I think it's just guesswork. You're not really connecting.
Getting specific information is difficult, and I mean it's.
Yeah, and Michelle, I'm the first one to say, if I don't get it, I don't get it. I'm too old to try to figure out how my ego works in this. You know, I think we connected to them. And I think from my experience that it was sound.
Legitimate.
It was true. And you got a message about nursing, which was a green light.
No, it was good. It was good. It was what I needed. And he's just been on my mind a lot lately. And I thank you very much. It was good.
The holiday. You know, of course, you would be in your mind. Okay.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Happy New
You're
Year.
Welcome.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. Well, our other caller did not want to wait.
Really?
Shame.
Ran the red light, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe they didn't like the way the reading was going. But
who cares? I'm sorry. I just spit all
here
over.
Here we are,
well.
Cynical Christmas. Well, we're trying to connect to Scrooge, as
and it seems to have worked.
We're getting the Scrooge before the end of the novella. Okay, so you know, the thing that was impressing me. In a way, it was what responsibility do we have in life to change as opposed to staying rigid in our beliefs? You know, sometimes people have very rigid ideas about things. Things are totally wrong or they're totally right. Take the sweep today that we have with gay rights and transgender and abortion and things like this. And when you look at it, some people downright will say, oh, that is against God, and I'm not moving on that. That is a holy sin, and there's no way to move. Or others will say, no. Oh, no, well, there's some that will say, wait a minute. There's some that will say, we have to love the sinners. We won't accept them, but we'll love them out of like the love of Christ. And then some will say, no, that's their life. They have responsibility for their life. It's not for us to judge their life. So we're going to take it a step further and say that we cannot judge anyone. So we have, and then we have the idea of people moving back and forth. Some liberals become strict, some strict fundamentalists become liberals, and some stay in the moderate zone, if you will.
Well, you failed to mention those on the liberal end. I mean, we are liberal, generally, politically speaking. I would classify us as liberal, but there are many people on the liberal end that don't, I mean, politically, political correctness is absolute. So you have people that are unyielding, that are liberals, and that believe that, you know, I mean, you know, everyone should accept these new rules according to transgenderism, and that, you know, we should be okay with like getting all operate, not everybody should be okay with it, but that, you know, operating on the body is okay. So there are people that are very strict that are on the liberal end as well, not just the conservatives.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
There's people who are strict on the liberal. What
there
I'm
are.
Saying is that when you have a firm belief in something, is it part of the energy field of one's life to switch, to make a change, to sway? And how does that register on the spiritual attitude of a person? In other words, some people would think that would be heresy, that it would go against their vows to shift gears and start to think another way. And what the one position of life is that even in biblical terms, God was swayed. God was swayed not to destroy towns and villages. He had this attitude of forgiveness. So when we have what happened was there was a harsh judgment. Okay, so in biblical terms, this is harsh judgment. You ate of the tree of knowledge. You did what I told you. You're screwed. That's it. Then what happens midterm in the history of the religious Bible is that Christ comes in and then he says, well, I've got a message. Love one another and forgive. Forgive your sins. And then he, you know, confess them, and there's all these other subplots going on, and don't repeat the same mistakes and learn. But there's an attitude of forgiveness. And there's an attitude that those untouchables, those people who were considered subhuman, were now put on the top of the throne in God's eyes. They were the ones that God was going to purposely resurrect. So we have this idea that we change. Even look at life, how we change in life. We're no longer, the Bible will say, you know, you no longer belong to childish things. You change your energy, you change your mind, you change your body. Everything changes in the process of life. So we have to accept the idea that individually we evolutionize. There's an element of evolution in our consciousness as much as there is in the way that we shape our bodies and grow throughout life. And in that attitude of highest energy is the word acceptance. Forgiveness, acceptance, leniency, what you know, in the term of being liberal, which has become a very polluted word from its origins, is the attitude of understanding the depth of human suffering, I think. Did you want something?
No, go ahead.
Well, I'm responding to what you said about about your comment.
About what I said about my comment?
What, you said
what
comment.
I said about my comment?
Yeah.
No, I made a comment. I didn't
what
comment
you,
on my
I'm
comment.
I'm responding to what you said, and I'm responding to your comment.
So, well, if you're talking about evolution, as far as God evolving from, for instance, the Garden of Eden, you know, the expulsion in the Garden of Eden, to Christ's arrival on the planet, would you say that God is continuously evolving in what he deems acceptable? regarding behavior or rules, because I know, I mean, from personal experience, I know that as far as your belief system goes, there's a very, very strict set of rules. And yes, we do evolve as human beings, of course, and that as people that grow through time and change through time, or change through time, we should be less judgmental and harsh in our own lives and more accepting. I think
No, I'm not. God said, I'm the Lord thy God. God is fixed. I believe God is fixed. God doesn't evolve. What we do is we move deeper into the energy of God.
Well, in some way, God did. There was an, according to the Old Testament and the New Testament, there must have been some sort of change.
Not if it was all
planned,
plotted.
Of course.
So,
but
and it was plotted.
According to,
if there's indication strongly to argue that it was plotted from the beginning of life, in terms of, now we're talking about biblical passage because we have no other scientific analysis we can judge this on. So in that regard, it's plotted. It's the same as simply saying a mystery writer is plotting the end. Oh, did the mystery writer suddenly discover who killed him? Or was the mystery writer aware of it from the first page and was plotting and deceiving in a way the reader and misleading the reader and going through the plot? I think that the problem isn't so much on an earthly level. The problem, in some allusions to biblical terms, is what went on before we got here. Okay, there was a war in heaven, and Michael and the angels, there was a war in heaven. They threw the devil, they threw Satan out, they threw Lucifer out. There was also the idea that that Christ says, I'm not of this earth. There's many mansions. I'm from another world. What? So there's got to be something. And in the creation of the earth, there's this suggestion that there are gods, that there are other, maybe those were deemed as angels, I don't know, but there were several energies out there that were pre-existing before the creation of the earth. So it's not so much that we look at our planet as though it were a totality. Our planet is a subplot. We are not the plot. We are the subplot of existence. So, and subplot means exactly that. We come out of the depth of a deeper plot. And in that deeper plot of analysis, our consciousness is only partially aware of the whole story.
Well, it's funny because it reminds me of a recent client who talked about, you know, responding to a question about what does the astral realm mean to you? What is your definition of spirit? And what happens, you know, after we die? The definition that the client gave is, well, when you die, you know, you go into a big ball of energy, and that energy controls what goes on the planet. which, I mean, human beings can be kind of egocentric because the planet is, you know, very dense in its composition, and people are into their physical lives. So the awareness, I mean, it was rather shocking, actually. It was rather shocking. But anyway, you know, people believe that this is it, and that the universe adapts to the earth, what goes on the planet, which is not how it is.
Well,
I mean, this is a small,
that,
much.
That concept is sort of alluding to astrology and the alignment of the planets and how we're controlled, and there are forces out there that are maybe there is some truth to that. There's a higher authority out there.
But the universe does not, right, but the universe does not exist for the planet Earth.
No.
It just, that is a sheerly wrong belief.
There is definitely sacred energy here. God created life here, and he sanctified it. and he created it in the image of, well, himself.
God is non-entity. I mean, non.
But we're just using
female or male. But yeah, obviously the pronoun is. Terms.
So the that part, there's a certain sacredness and there's a certain rule of conduct that was given to us through the Ten Commandments. And at that point, Moses had to climb Mount Sinai and be delivered the Ten Commandments. And then upon descending, they were already being broken, whereupon there was a broken tablet. Mel Brooks says there were like 22 commandments, but one of the tablets broke, so it was condensed down to 10. But there are actually more than 10 commandments. We just look at the main 10 that are the most popularized commandments from God. But those were then broken, and when you break one of those commandments, you are considered separated from God.
Separated from God. But I mean, if we look over the Ten Commandments, some of the commandments, I mean, not all of the commandments concern mortal sins. Some of them involve venial sins.
Yeah.
So how separated is one from God in committing a venial sin versus how separated from God is one in committing a mortal sin? And what separation are we talking? What kind of separation are we talking about? I mean, if a person lives multiple lives, are they condemned if they kill somebody in one lifetime? If a person kills someone in one lifetime, is their soul condemned for eternity, or do they have a chance to redeem themselves? But we have a caller.
Okay.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Neil. Hi, Christian. How are you?
Hi, fine. Hi. Thanks. How are you?
Great. Resting up. That's all I could do right now.
What?
I'm resting up. I finally got a break to rest up.
Oh, ooh. Good. 1565. She's 27.9.
Yeah.
Okay. What's going on?
Nothing. I'm resting. I needed to rest.
Okay, well, you called the show. Did you call to tell us you were resting, or did you have a question?
Mm-mm. I just called and I was just listening in because,
you know.
You
didn't raise your hand.
No, I didn't. However, you got me online.
I guess I misinterpreted your call. I assumed maybe you'd forgotten to press one because sometimes that happens.
What were you led to believe? What were you led to believe, Jackie, in growing up? What were your standards of belief in God and your upbringing?
Were you like Baptist?
I went to parochial school, but my background was Methodist in terms of where we went to church as a family, and then we really stopped attending. However, as far as the Ten Commandments was concerned, I remember constantly being told, you know, to honor thy mother and thy father, and you know, your And it stuck with me because that's where I've been for the longest, trying to honor them. In terms of the first commandment and loving God and not putting, you know, anything in front of God, I wrestled with that with like a lot of conflicting beliefs, even such as even trying to get a reading. Growing up, I was led to believe on one side that if you sought out information like this, that you were going against God. And you would be condemned for it. However, I don't necessarily believe that anymore. I think religion itself, as we were taught, is manipulating the information. Now, if I'm wrong, I also cry out to God to forgive me for being wrong, but I don't think I should be condemned for being wrong.
Well, that's kind of where we left off on our conversation is how long, I mean, what really separates a soul from God for eternity versus in a specific lifetime, which demands that a soul comes back to pay off karma, what we deem as karma.
Right.
So, I mean, that's an existential question, but it's challenging because I also come from a religious background where there was a lot of guilt and rules imposed on me. At the same time, there was a positive side to it too. So I'm grateful for that religious upbringing. But
yes, because I always loved song. I always loved to sing, and the singing came from the worship service. So I always loved to worship, but I still always had questions as well. And,
right.
You know, and that really pretty much came from, you know, how we were being taught. If we were being taught the right things, I think we're at a point now in time where more information is being revealed to all of us, and we're getting more truth, if anything, now than we ever did in the past.
See, I think there is accuracy, actually, in the information that came through, but there's hypocrisy within religion. So, and also there's information or the imposition of rules without a lot of accompanying knowledge that's shared. So once you start to become more knowledgeable about whatever rules there might apply to humankind as far as how do you get off the planet and so on and so forth, and what misinformation, I mean, there's just a big mix. And I think being educated is important. Most people aren't.
Well, yeah, and Dan, to respond to your premise, Jackie, actually in the past we were more connected and had more revelation and insight and connection to God. It started to decline from the Garden of Eden. What we have now is a replacement of artificial intelligence, and we are creating we're growing in the attitude of becoming God and consume control and create life on our own basis through cloning and things like this.
Which we've already started to do, actually.
The fundamentalists, I mean, they're dwindling. We're becoming a world that is not, we're not as one nation under God. That's not really the premise anymore. So actually we're straying from the origin of God, and we're becoming consciously involved in a different element, existentially speaking, scientifically speaking, that God has changed. And as he's changed, we've internalized this concept that maybe we are God. Maybe we control our destiny. And, and that's where I feel the question is going in terms of, oh, have we really reached the center? I mean, there was the Jesus movement and all that, and there was popularity. That's not there anymore. That's not to say that there isn't a stronghold of sound religious people, if you want to put it that way. But the spiritual movement, even the antithesis of Christianity in so many words. Go on, you want to respond?
Well, I mean, I understand what you're saying about, you know, the movement with us becoming God, or at least having our own free will to alter outcomes. I get that. But the part of it that I question is I think a lot of it is subject to interpretation, and many different movements have their own interpretation for the exact same thing. And maybe that whole movement of God within us is coming from the individual for what they feel on the inside. I think if anything, I mean, as a society, we already see the breakdown. But individually, I think people are coming to themselves and knowing that God is within them. Not necessarily saying I'm a God or I'm a goddess, but God is within me. I know that there's a higher source.
Well,
I'm connected. I know that I'm connected somehow, some way to this highest source, because that source reveals itself to me many times when I can't do anything for myself, or when feel helpless.
I think for you, I mean, you seem to realize a connection to God, but I think on the whole, as society, the God within us concept is really not wholly applied to each person. It's more about being one's own God. It's the whole evolution of the internet and you know, the promotion of self, everybody wanting to be a star. So I don't think I think consciousness has declined about God being within and we being vessels of God. It's more an egocentric
belief. Well, do you believe right now that you're doing what God would want you to do?
Do I believe me specifically?
Right. Just in general.
In general? I mean, are you asking
you
if
help
I'm
people,
called?
You help people. You try to be a light. You try to deal with mankind or other people holistically and fairly, and you're conscious of their feelings. You try to make mankind a better place. Isn't that what God would want us to do?
Yes, I do believe that. I mean, if to say that I'm with, you know, either one of us are without faults or sins. I mean, we're
right.
Sinners. We're all sinners. We're on the planet.
Right.
So obviously we're sinners. So in that aside, as far as doing this type of work for people and dedicating our lives to helping others,
mm-hmm.
yes, definitely I believe that we're doing what God wants us to do, for sure.
Right.
I mean, if I was going to do what I wanted to do, you know, and let myself be led in another direction, I'd be probably misled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a deep conversation. It gives you a lot to think about, right?
It does.
It gives you a lot to think about.
It does.
Even with understanding what's going on in the universe, with understanding just nature itself, like, 'cause I'm blown away by nature, like how nature responds to certain things. I'm blown away by geometry. I'm blown away by, you know, a seed. How a seed, one little hard seed, could turn into a beautiful plant and provide food. You know, that only could come from a higher source. I mean, when you take the time to think about it.
Yeah.
You and I didn't do it. We watch it unfold.
Yeah. The marveling at nature, I mean, we're big advocates of nature. And that is one of the sheer signs of the massive amount of creativity that the Creator has,
mm-hmm.
that is beyond. The thing is, you know, we have the ability to create. I mean, destroy, but essentially we don't. We have the ability to create
too.
Conception,
yeah.
But we can't. Mm-hmm. We can't really create life as we really think of it, in terms of the original creation, and how
mm-hmm.
all. These forms of life and consciousness and energy. Now there's a great debate about whether animals, well, there's always been a debate about whether wild animals have feelings, you know, or some people believe they don't. And so it gives them an excuse to slaughter animals and kill them and not think about their feelings. Now it's nothing new, Jackie, but there's consciousness about fish and plants and trees.
Mm-hmm.
And everything has a consciousness. Everything has a thought form about survival and fear.
Yeah. You know, we had to put one of
unit.
We had to put one of our family dogs down last week.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Oh, yes. It was hard. It was very hard. But she was suffering. And
yeah, that's but it's just difficult to go through that and lose a pet.
Yes. Yeah, and the strangest thing is, like, I feel like she's watching over us. My son was moved out the day before, him and his girlfriend and the baby. They went to her mother's house. And the dog wasn't feeling well for about a week before, and she was going back and forth to the vet. And then the following day, they just said we had to put her down. And this is a dog that always slept with her eyes closed, and she grunted. She was a puggle. But when it was time to put her down, she was the prettiest I've ever seen her. And it, yes, I mean, everything changed about her. I mean, I literally have to look at pictures when she was alive and pictures when she was traveling to the other side. And I realized she wanted to go. And the thing is, because you mentioned about, you know, the animals and stuff, right? Wild animals or whatever. Some people will consider dogs wild, but they're dogs. They're not human. She transformed right in front of us.
Yeah, whether there is a attitude of either it being the soul or the spirit, when the soul and or spirit is released, finally released from the body, there's a communication that goes on. Because the soul and the spirit is saying goodbye to the vessel, to the energy that contained it. And so there's a general parting of energy. A lot of times doctors will say, you know, when people die, there's a tear shed, and you can see it running down their eye. And some mm-hmm. people say that that's just the release of bodily fluid and all this. But there's mm-hmm. also a consciousness that we can't prove, but I believe goes on in the mm-hmm. in the final statement that the soul and spirit has with the body is released forever. There's a breaking of the silver cord, and there's a final farewell for the amount of years that were spent on the planet. And that mm-hmm. when that body is finally released, there's a sense of composure and tranquility that it's
yes.
over. It's done.
And
those are things.
And you know, a second before they began to administer the dosage to her, the light blink. And she was in a hospital, a beautiful little animal hospital. The light blink. And I caught it. And I remember my mom used to say, my father used to communicate with her through the lights after he first passed. And the energy in the room was goodbye, I'm good. And she just went on. And I mean, when I tell you, she did not even look like herself. Like, I literally normally would have been afraid to touch an animal that had passed. I had to just go and touch her and feel that she was so beautiful.
Yeah, the energy, there's a dramatic transformation of energy that goes on in the final moment and in the final release that can be very visible in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
I've been privileged, well, not privileged, but I've experienced bodies crossing over, my mother one of them, at the moment
mm-hmm.
of death, and can mm-hmm. observe the astral body leaving. Seeing the astral body leaving by the passage of the third eye. And
mm-hmm.
some people, when that happened, I said, oh, she crossed over. And the nurse, the attending nurse said, no, she didn't. She's alive. I go, no, because I saw her right above her body. And then she
mm-hmm.
checked her and she said, oh my God, yeah, she's gone. So the idea that, there is, the body is released. It's
mm-hmm.
totally released of energy. It's no longer
mm-hmm.
breathing. But the physical breath, Jackie, goes into the eternal breath of the soul and the spirit. So this
okay.
is God breathed into our nostrils and created life. Our spirit and soul takes in the breath of the physical body. Now that can become karma. That becomes the
mm-hmm.
history of the life on the planet. And that's what the soul and spirit carries with it upon the exit. So that's
mm-hmm.
why everything will be known. All of our works will be known. Every hair in our head will be known. It's all absorbed in a concentrated form of energy that the spirit and the soul contain.
Of course, when we're talking, though, about her dog, I mean, dogs don't have souls. They're connected to spirit because dogs don't have
karma. Yeah, I saw the same type of things with my mother. I saw the same type of things with my mother. One thing I noticed with my mother when she was
today. What?
When my mother transitioned, and when I finally realized, you know, she was gone, I honestly saw her change in front of my eyes. I saw her change in front of my eyes, where she was 30 years younger. She looked like she looked the way she looked when I was younger.
Hmm.
I even at one point jumped up. I wanted to take a picture of it, but I couldn't figure out how to work my phone, the camera at the time.
Yeah, there is a dramatic energy field that is manifest in the physical body during that dramatic change. And then there is another journey, of course, that takes place, whether it be woman, man, animal, insect, there's a journey that takes place in the hereafter of physicality. And that journey is something that we still have yet to penetrate specifically into. I mean, we tend to think, well, everyone's, you know, you're in a rocking chair, you're fishing or something, or you're playing checkers with your Uncle Bob, or you're having a grand old time up there. You know, I don't think that's what the spiritual realm is about. It gives us comfort, you know, in physical bodies to conceive of the afterlife as some facet of physicality that is permanent.
When a spirit or a soul communicates with a psychic, there's a lot of references to the physical life. That's just so that soul can give the psychic clues to deliver to the subject that's being read, you know, that they're really coming through. So that's why souls will mention things that happened on the planet, because they're trying to link into the, you know, what would be familiar to the person that's connecting with them.
Yeah, there's a translation.
It doesn't mean that they're sitting up there doing that.
But that's very different than the state of energy that that a soul or a spirit goes into in the whatever that energy is. And but from there, you know, that's a journey that we can't. It's very hard to come back. Some people say, well, there's a great light out there and they see their loved ones and they see angels, and then they are sometimes told it's too early, you've got to go back, and they say it was such a loving place, they don't want to come back. Well, right there, that tells you that there's no connection to the earth, that once you're over there, you don't want to leave.
But on the same token, that's just the front door. Because the person, the person comes back into the body, the soul goes back into the body, and they've only experienced the entrance, essentially, of that realm. So what goes on beyond that is unknown. I mean,
unknown.
We cannot define it.
Of course, the entry into that world, religion makes it conditional. So there are conditions upon which we can enter into that realm, according to the idea of religion. According to the idea of spirit, it's just an open gate. There's no barriers. There's no walls. And I'm sure President Trump isn't sitting there judging who can get in and who can't.
He isn't?
No, not up there.
Oh.
But,
I was mistaken.
Yeah.
I have him on such a pedestal.
You got mistaken with the sound of the trumpet. So the idea that...
Forget Gabriel.
So the idea that what is... the process of the spirit and soul's entry into the hereafter. What is that process? What's it going to take? I'm bewildered because there's plenty of souls and spirits I've connected to that are wandering in what I deem to be the astral realm. They seem lost. And so there's no specific conclusion.
Which contradicts, you know, this idea of these near-death experiences where people are saying, oh, well, it's all light and family, and it's just this joyous, blissful experience. Obviously, that's not the totality of what's out there after death. And certainly, if you're coming back into the body, that may be what you experience once the soul initially leaves. But then there's the judgment of the soul and, you know, whatever work that needs to be done in the astral realm if the soul is coming back, and then the return to the body again in a new life, which...
So, how much...
She has a question.
Do you have a question, Jackie?
You know, just moving forward, I'm just trying to put things in a different perspective.
Do you, you said your son moved out. Was that permanent? The son and his girlfriend?
Yeah, it looks like it's permanent.
Really? So that's at least a bit of stress off you, because her son and his girlfriend have an infant. And
yeah, but you know, I worry over him, but I'm also giving, I'm also giving myself a chance to breathe, and I'm praying that he get his shit together. Excuse my French, you know, and
that's French.
You know, I love him. I love him, but at the same time, I have to love me, and he has to respect, you know, what I'm trying to do for us as a family.
Did you ask him to leave, and or did you?
Pretty much, we told him he had to go. Went through some paperwork, and you know, he seemed like he was ready to go.
Well, but I think that's good that you set that boundary for him, because how old is he?
Yeah.
Again? Like,
he's 21. He's the youngest.
You're having to bear the responsibility of having, you know, having another family in your roof. I mean, he's your family, but he has essentially a common law wife and a baby. And so you're responsible for not only you and your husband, but him, his baby, girlfriend.
The other family needs to step up and help them along their way. It was just myself and my husband, and he started to take advantage of that. But here it is right now, Christian. I'm to be honest with you, I've been trying not to focus on him, because you know, because all it was doing for me was building up fear and worries. I trust the universe that he's going to be all right, and he'll find his way to himself. That's where I want to be at this point, because,
good,
you know, I spread myself too thin, and everything was sitting in my belly, between my chest and my belly, and there's only but so much you could continue to keep saying over and over to someone in terms of getting yourself together. I mean, he's not the worst, but he could be much better. And,
yeah.
I, you know, if anything, I want him to learn to appreciate family and learn loyalty. And, you know, he's trying to do the best as a father, but he's young in his mind, but not in his mouth.
Hmm.
So he'll learn, you know, before
it's
too
late. Well, that's just it. You know, Jackie, the whole attitude, we have to decipher. You asked us, oh, are we doing our life plan? We're helping people and things like this. The idea that we are on the planet and we have to put into certain divisions what our responsibilities are to ourselves, to our fellow human beings, to our government, to bills have to be paid, and then our sense of responsibility to things that are on the other side of the coin, the spiritual things. So usually what happens in terms of the body of the church is that we represent, not us specifically, but the church itself represents hope, salvation, faith. The things that human beings, when they can't find their answers in life, when things become overwhelming, when their level of comfort is disturbed, then they go to that metaphorical conclusion that the body of God is within the religious figures.
Well,
and so they represent some extent faith, hope, salvation, forgiveness, love, compassion, and assistance.
But however, it's interesting because we watched a movie last night. I don't want to give too much away about the movie, but it was called The Two Popes, and it was about Pope Benedict and Pope Francis before he was the Pope. Before Pope Francis.
What's the name of the movie?
The Two Popes. And,
okay,
you know, it's really, the entire movie is, the bulk of the movie is a conversation between these two individuals. One is the Pope on his, Pope Benedict on his way out, and the other is, what's his last name? Pope Francis Bergoglio. Is that right? Bergoglio? I'm not saying it correctly. Anyway, he at the time is a cardinal, and it's about this division of their beliefs and the division in the church that was coming up because of all the scandal and because of the conservative nature of the church. church, so if we're talking about the church being a place where people can find hope, salvation, you know, faith, comfort, I mean, really, in this example, the Catholic Church was not that place for many people seeking that kind of those things. I mean, definitely not. And Pope Francis obviously brought in a new attitude that was much less conservative. He, you know, his beliefs about letting, I guess the Catholic Church is, believes that people that are divorced, they get excommunicated. And he, you know, it changed the tone of the Catholic Church and who was accepted to the church. So tried to bring some change into the way that the church approached.
I would have to definitely see that movie.
It's actually
very
interesting. It's very interesting.
Like I said, I went to parochial school, and I happened to be in a diocese that was affected by the pedophilia priests.
I think that's a very common experience of people that are Catholic.
A major diocese where I live. I'd rather not call it out because I had no idea just how deeply entrenched the Catholic Church was and the type of power that they wield. You know, it's kind of mind-boggling.
Yeah,
At one point, the diocese used to be like home and family, and the next minute when the truth started to come out, it was like, okay.
I know.
Unfortunately, when those schools began to close down behind the lawsuits, a lot of kids, including mine, was left out there to try to figure out, well, where we're going to go to school now. So we pretty much left somewhat what you call a safe haven and thrown to the wolves, because a lot of kids go to parochial school, and they go to public school, they have a very, very hard time making the adjustment.
Yeah, it's definitely different.
Very, very hard time. Different. Very hard time. And I mean, I graduated from parochial school, and you know, it was a safer place for me and my siblings, and you know, for my children. Like,
typically, I think the education is superior unless you're like a. I mean, unless you're at a really outstanding public school. I had experience in parochial and public schools, and I believe that the education, generally speaking, was better in parochial schools.
The environment was night and day, even up to the high school. The environment was
I was ahead of my classmates when I transferred from parochial school to public school, the public school classmates. So.
Yeah, they usually are. My kid was ahead, but he left from, like, Eden, and then he end up in, you know, in Babylon, you know.
Well, that's it.
When in Rome, do as the Romans do. That's a whole nother conversation. I don't know if you have anybody on the phone. That's another conversation off the air. Like I said, I live in that diocese, and I mean, they still control a lot of stuff, including politics. All right, and
sure.
So
yeah. Well, there's, I mean, into a deeper discussion. I mean, there's a lot of things to be discussed about the Catholic Church, and really at the heart of the Catholic Church, in the highest realms, where they're exactly coming from and what's.
I remember Pope Francis. I'll never forget Pope Francis. I thought he was a very good pope. We loved him.
Well, he's still the pope.
I mean, Pope John Paul.
You're thinking Pope John Paul II. Yeah, I know.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
He was like, he was like God to us when I went to school. Pope John Paul, I'll never forget when he even came to New York. Like, oh my God, if you were in the presence of Pope John Paul, you met Jesus himself.
Yeah, he was a very loving pope.
Right.
And in contrast, Benedict was, to me, a shocking choice just because of his history, and he was involved with the Nazi party, and he's against conservative, and anyway.
And when he exited, if I'm getting my popes right, because I'm telling you, in my mind, the only pope I could say in my life that I know is Pope of Pope was John Paul.
Yeah.
But when he exited stage left, and someone came in, and right, that made me raise an eyebrow, like, this is the first time that I know of in history that there were two popes. And only other time that I think anything was as controversial was when you go back, like, in maybe the Middle Ages.
What was going on then?
Well, Martin Luther died.
Real quick, because we got to close. We're at the end of the show. But Pope John Paul died, and then Pope Benedict came in. But because of the scandal in the church, Pope Benedict decided to resign, and then the new pope that we have currently, Pope Francis, was elected. So that was where the scandal was, with Pope Benedict and Pope Francis, because usually a pope doesn't resign, they hold the position for life.
Right, usually
until they die.
And then we'll come in. Exactly.
Yeah.
That was cataclysmic.
Yeah.
Real quick, going into 2020, what are the numbers saying?
Well, you had a change.
Should I wait till next week?
Well, probably wait till next week, because then we're going to get into a whole reading and it's already after 10.
Yeah.
Our time.
Let's
Is that okay?
Back the next time
we're back on the air Monday. Yeah. Oh, we're on Friday. You can give us a call Friday this week if you're off.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay,
but the
I'll
change
watch
is
for
good
you.
So far, right?
Yeah, and it's really good that your son moved. I mean, that is a big change. So, you know, you can focus more on getting your career change going with him gone and not having all that extra burden. But we'll discuss it more.
Okay, baby. Thank you.
Thanks for calling today.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care. And we are back on the air on Friday. Hope everyone has a Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Talk to you on Friday.